Thank you, Jeff. And now, most of you know her as Sarah, the chaos gremlin. This is hers.
I wrote this.
You know what? I wrote it. The honey badger of joy. But she is also Reverend Dr. Sarah Radican, Navy veteran, happiness researcher, and an internationally certified chief happiness officer, which shows. Her work in gratitude, belonging, and well-being is not just theoretical, it's forged in lived experiences and years of study and practice. She works with leaders and organizations around the world to build cultures where people don't just survive, they thrive. She's also a deeply committed Unitarian Universalist who believes happiness is sacred work, and she has the scars and the credentials to back that up. And her message is called When the Light Comes Back, Happiness and the Courage to Flourish.
Enough.
Oh, good morning. We're gonna try something a little different today. This is gonna be a little bit of call and response. So some of you have done this before, but when you hear me say the word happy,
happy,
you call back happy. Let's try that. I'm happy to be here.
Happy.
Happy.
All right, we got this. So quick show of hands, how many of you here have had at least one period of your life that you would absolutely not put on a highlight reel? Yeah, right? Thank you. Being human isn't without the messy parts. And in reality, we know that everybody lives through the seasons that are less than stellar. I want to begin today's conversation with a little walk or maybe a stumble down memory lane. I know I have shared in this space a few tender experiences before, and my goodness, I did serve in the military, which has its own unique way of leaving scars on the body and the spirit. But even if you have lived a charmed life so far, collectively, everybody in this room has lived through things like COVID, with its ambiguity and fear and uncertainty. And every day, maybe even on your drive-in this morning listening to NPR, like all good Unitarian Universalists do, you were probably exposed to warnings or information about terrible, scary things happening in the world. And even if you manage to only pay attention a little bit, that's a lot to carry. But friends, there was a year in my life when I was absolutely certain that I was never going to be happy,
happy
again. And this was the year I turned 30. And this isn't some cute, dirty 30 pity party. This was more like Forrest Gump meets Dante's Inferno. And I'm gonna share just a few of the lowlights of that year. To kick off the party, I was diagnosed with cancer and had a hysterectomy, which ended my ability to continue breastfeeding my youngest child and pushed me into early menopause. Mommy guilt, meet hot flashes, woo! Within that same time frame, my husband, the father of my four children, was arrested on heinous charges and went to prison. At one point, the SWAT team surrounded our house and hauled boxes out while the neighbors stood on the sidewalk in gleeful interest. And so overnight, I became a single mom to four kids in crisis and a social pariah at a time when I most desperately needed my community. As a result, our income collapsed, so the van was repossessed, the house was foreclosed on, and because that wasn't enough strain, my youngest child, who still wasn't even two yet, developed a skull infection and needed emergency surgery, like diagnosis at noon, surgery at 5, emergency surgery. And I couldn't even reach her dad to tell her about it for weeks because he was in processing. My brother was in a catastrophic car accident, which landed him in a coma, and he never fully recovered. He actually passed away from those injuries a few painful years later. And just before my 30th birthday, I found my first gray hair, which sounds kind of minute and maybe even a little vain or petty, but against the backdrop of everything going on, it felt deeply offensive. It was the straw, or I guess the hair, that broke the camel's back. And all of these personal crises were exploding against the backdrop of a post-9/11 world and all of the tragedies that came from that, and things were feeling incredibly unstable, which reminds me a lot of today. There's a lot of instability and uncertainty and fear wrapping all of us in its not-so-loving arms. And it felt like the universe kind of leaned in and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Psst, sucks to be you, sister. No more happiness for you." Whew, it was a lot, and that's just the high points. Now, you may recognize these words from Leonard Cohen, and if you do, please join me. "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." And my goodness, there were plenty of cracks in my world, but I was really struggling to see any light. I truly believed that happiness was just happiness.
Happy!
The job was just for other people. And those were the stable ones, the lucky ones, people who made good choices, people whose lives were not collapsing in increasingly spectacular gut punches on a regular basis. So, to deal with this, I convinced myself that if I could just worry enough, I could prepare for anything. Has anybody else ever tried to pre-worry your way into safety? Yeah, anybody? My people, tribe, I see you. However, it turns out that's not the way it really works. But, good news, I did eventually learn to stop asking, what else can go wrong? I'm not even going to say it from the podium. Because the universe is more than happy to let us know. Catching on, I like it. Now, despite all of these challenges, and many more, because we all have crazy complex lives, for as long as I can remember, my grandma Marge, my grandmother, was a constant source of comfort and support and really good ideas. And during a particularly emotional phone call, my grandmother suggested something that sounded absolutely bonkers. She suggested I try a little gratitude. Not gratitude for the cancer or any of the other chaos, but gratitude as a way of paying attention to what was going right. She suggested that I spend just a little time every day pulling myself up out of the mud and thinking about one small thing that was going well, one thread of goodness, one tiny sparkle of joy. And really, I thought she was out of her mind. How could this possibly help? But to be fair, she had never given me bad advice. She gave me a really great potato soup recipe. This might work too. And frankly, I was desperate. Now, has anybody ever heard the phrase, "Look for the silver lining"? Oh, when I hear that, my blood just boils. I hate that phrase because it always gets trotted out when you're facing catastrophic situations, right? It's meant to be a helper, but what it really does is dismiss the very real pain and difficulty of those spaces. But while we can't just reframe things like some kind of a Stepford Wife reenactment, we can find little tiny moments of joy. And so if I could not find a silver lining, I thought maybe I can just find a silver thread here and there. And I found lots of them. I found things like the first day after a stomach bug had wreaked havoc on our family that nobody vomited on me. That was a really good day. It really was. I also remember a sound a few weeks after their dad went away that my kids were laughing together in the other room. I wasn't sure I'd ever hear that sound again. I remember the joy of a warm cup of coffee. That still brings me happiness. You hear me downstairs. You know. Or a beautiful sunset that just stopped me in my tracks because it was so amazing. Now you try it. Don't overthink this. Don't spend too much time on it. But think back over the last 24 hours. Think of something, just one little thing, that was pretty okay. Anybody got them? Save them for the conversation. I'll ask for them then. But we know that it's true that the cracks can let in the light if we're looking for them. Now, nothing about my circumstances changed overnight as a result of practicing this. Normal, whatever that is, took a really long time to show up in my world. My spouse might say it's still not there. But something in me absolutely shifted, and that didn't take very long at all. Because gratitude wasn't trying to erase my pain. It was expanding my field of vision. And it reminded me that despair wasn't the only companion on my journey. Happiness was there too. It might be small, but it was stubbornly waiting just for me to notice it. And this was a real pivot point for me in my life. Not into a forced or toxic positivity, and not into pretending that everything was fine. But I realized that happiness is not something that we just pursue when life is going well. It is really what grows when the conditions are right. It's a gauge. It tells us, are the environment that we find ourselves in and the circumstances the kind of things that support us as humans and align with the values and the way that we need and want to live our lives? And when the answer is yes, happiness blossoms.
Happy!
I'm gonna get you, just wait. Now, years later, that private practice, decades later at this point, that private practice has grown into a public calling, and I have stepped into work centered on gratitude and well-being. I did become an internationally certified chief happiness officer. That's a real thing. Looking at the science of what allows good feelings to show up. This matters. And it's kind of hilarious, given my origin story, right, that I'm a happiness officer.
Happy!
But I get to work with people every day, helping them notice what's going right, even when everything else isn't. And I get to improve people's life experience, job experience, and general well-being. And that is a gift of epic proportions. And about a year ago, I was gifted the title of the Honey Badger of Joy. How fun is that? Some of you have the stickers, and if you don't, see me after coffee hour, I have more. And this shift didn't just happen because my life suddenly became easy. I've had lots of experiences since then that were just as complicated as the list we shared earlier. But the change in me happened because I allowed myself to believe, to truly believe deep in my core, that joy is all around us. And that joy can survive surgical suites, foreclosure notices, prison sentences, and so much more. And you don't have to take my word for it. We have scads of history with breathtaking art and beautiful music that's created in the darkest human moments. And we even now see examples of kindness and delight during horrific tragedies, like the Singing Resistance experiences. Those are joy-filled moments against a backdrop that is a little more complex. So the joy is there. It's just sometimes hard to notice when we're bombarded with the scary stuff. And that's because of biology. Our brains are wired, hardwired, to scan the horizon for danger. And that ancient wiring is what keeps us alive, so that's a really good thing. So we are constantly, consciously, and subconsciously tracking threats, and in the world of 24-hour news cycles and algorithm-fed alarm bells on our wrists and in our pockets, that threat detection system is working overdrive. We are collectively marinating in a cortisol-heavy stress soup. And all of that is on autopilot. So it's incumbent on us to use our wrinkly, thinky brain privilege and continuously train ourselves to notice the good as well. Now I have some good news for you. It doesn't take much joy to shift the chemistry radically. It's like emotional Alka-Seltzer, and you get almost immediate relief. And if you don't believe me, come to laughter yoga tomorrow night. You'll see for yourself. We know that joy is not fragile. Hope, delight, gratitude, these good feelings, they are fleeting, they are transient, and they are all around us. If we just pay attention, we will find them woven through the fabric of our lives, knotted right alongside the hard parts. And they can be cultivated. And that brings me to spring. Marcel Proust wrote, "Let us be grateful to the people who make us happy.
Happy!
They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom." I love that image. I love to garden. But every year around this time, I catch myself feeling the Midwest gloomy gray days. And then one morning, the sun lingers just a little bit longer. The air starts to warm up. The soil starts to soften, and the ground begins to come alive. And, you know, spring doesn't argue with winter to get out of the way. It just changes the conditions that we find ourselves in. And gardeners don't manufacture flowers. They cultivate the conditions where they can grow. They tend the soil. They water the beds. They protect the fragile shoots when they need a little extra support. They trust the seasons. They simply tend, and they keep tending, because it's not enough to just do it once. And just like a garden also has weeds, happiness is not the only emotion that grows. But just like weeds can feed pollinators, grief can bring us wisdom. Anger can offer us clarity or motivation. Fear absolutely protects us. Sadness deepens our ability for compassion. These are the tools that we need to cultivate a world of possibility. But if all we ever do is brace for the danger, nothing beautiful ever gets planted. So happiness is not denial. It is what blooms when we create the spaces where it is safe to exhale. And the people who create those kinds of spaces tend to be people who resonate with our shared values. People who practice interdependence instead of isolation. People who respect and appreciate pluralism instead of rigid one true wayism. People who build justice instead of gatekeeping it. Those who offer generosity without keeping score. And the people who allow transformation to happen instead of resisting or squashing necessary growth. Now, I grew up hearing this, and you may have too. It is not my job to make you happy.
Happy.
It's my job to make you strong. And I grew up in America, and I served in a military that carried a very similar message. That lone wolf, army of one. Some really misleading messaging about these magical bootstraps of self-levitation. And I believe those messages because strength matters. It does, to a point. So I tried to be independent. I thought that being resilient meant you never collapse. Love meant being useful. Worthiness meant being competent. The stakes were high and the pressure was intense. And it was exhausting. So not long after that very offensive gray hair appeared, I found myself in a Unitarian Universalist church way up on a hill, in a fellowship hall much like ours. And those of you who have only known me in the last couple of years may be shocked to hear this, but I did not breeze through those doors with my superhero cape fluttering behind me, and there was no honey badger energy in sight. I was emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally battered, bruised, and exhausted. And it was okay, because no one needed me to be inspiring. They were just glad that I was there. Although I am suspicious that they were also super happy that I brought four new kids to the children's education program. There are perks, right? But in those spaces, much like here, food was shared, coffee and tea flowed like the lifeblood that they are, joys and sorrows were held in the space, and slowly that knot that had tied itself in my soul began to loosen a little bit, and I would go home lighter than I had felt in a really long time. That was interdependence before I even really had language for it, that embodied reminder that we are not meant to survive alone. We breathe the air that the trees release. We drink water the clouds have carried. We belong to and impact each other, whether we acknowledge it or not. And there was an incredible spaciousness in these spaces, too. I attended an adult religious education program exploring the faces and names of God, and as an atheist, that was weird. But in that space, someone described God as a river. Another spoke of the ancestors. Someone named the sacredness of science, and another person trusted deeply in the power of collective humanity without any God language at all. And no one corrected or argued with anyone, because pluralism is not a debate to win. It is the oxygen for the conversations that allow us to build our own understanding and make the connections that make life better. Have you ever been in a room where you didn't have to defend your own way of being? That is spiritual spaciousness. We don't need to think, worship, or believe alike to love alike. And when I look back at who else was included in those spaces, I see justice in action. Not as a slogan on a poster, but as a commitment to create the diverse, multicultural, multifaceted spaces where everyone truly is welcome and has the ability to thrive. This is a quiet but powerful architecture that makes healing possible for more than just the chosen few. And it's a lived expression of our belief in the inherent worth and dignity of all. And justice isn't possible, is not possible, without equity. There were days, there still are days, when I feel reduced to a diagnosis or a debt or some new crisis, and I have met many other people who do not feel worthy to sit at these tables or to help build something beautiful. But equity insists that you are more than what is happening to you. We all have the right, the inalienable right, to flourish with dignity and love and compassion. Our dignity is not negotiable, and it's not because we are strong or inspiring or turn our trauma into sermons. It's just because we exist. That year really broke the version of me that I thought I was supposed to be. But you know, there's the self you plan for, and then there's the self that is forged in the fires along the journey of life. And transformation is almost never actually gentle. Landscapes shift abruptly, organizations fracture, revolutions are chaos even when they're necessary. Birth and death and everything in between is not tidy. But when I stopped staring only at what was ending, and began noticing what was blossoming in its place, I saw something amazing. I found strength that did not require isolation. I found a love that did not require performance. And as that transformation unfolded, generosity flowed and allowed me to be more generous as well. Meals showed up on my porch. I had rides to appointments. I got amazing hugs at the RE drop-off door. Generosity widens our doorway, and it reminds us that we all need and we all can give in the exact same moments, whether that is our time, our talent, our treasure, our presence. Yes, we have to keep the lights on, and we also have to show up in the ways that will never show up on a treasurer's report, but matter just as much, and maybe more. And under all of this, through all of this, around all of this was love. Love that brought casseroles, love that helped me pack, love that helped me with really confusing paperwork, or just held a space for me to breathe. Love makes space at those tables, and make sure you sit down there too. Love will boop you on the nose and refuse to let despair isolate you. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "People deal too much with the negative and what is wrong. Why not try and see positive things, to just touch those things and make them bloom?" I did not become a honey badger of joy just because life spared me. I just didn't and do not let despair get the final word. And I have dedicated my life to cultivating spaces where the positive things can bloom. In a couple of weeks, on March 20th, which is the same day as the spring equinox, the world marks the International Day of Happiness.
Happy!
This was established by the United Nations in 2012, so in my world, this alignment makes for a high, holy day, the best kind. I hope that you will celebrate it with me in whatever way makes the most sense in your world. Bring a little more joy to your world and the people around you, because it matters. May we intentionally cultivate the conditions where all of us can flourish. May our joy be stubborn enough to survive the difficult seasons and remind each other that there is still good, so much good. May we learn to notice, pay attention to the great and small joys and gather them up like the bright silver threads and weave a living tapestry of community rooted deeply in that love so it can come alive with perfectly imperfect, holy humanity. Amen. Ramen. Namaste, blessed be, and friends, let's make it so.
We are going to have a discussion about that because it's excellent. I do have to start us off, though, if you'll give me 30 seconds. I wrote a whole sermon over here. I'm going to include it in my sermon, I'll tell you what. But I have a reputation. And it's time I explained it. I don't answer my phone. I don't check my email. I don't read my texts. And I thought it was time to explain why. A while ago, Charlie Kirk was compared to MLK Jr. And there's been an effort to immortalize him in our government buildings. A successful effort, actually. There's a bust in one of our major government buildings. And the comparison between those two is strange. Social media, I feel like this is fundamental to this. Social media thrives on conflict. Social media keeps you angry. And I feel like that's in opposition to happiness.
Happy!
We
can
do it.
I was watching the latest Jubilee, which is where people argue, basically. They debate. And at the end, it just became a measuring contest. I'm taller than you. It occurred to me that people don't actually talk that way. That happiness is possible, and that social media is doing a great job of dividing us. And I just thought that was an interesting thought to start us off. Like, what can we actively do to promote togetherness instead of being in opposition to each other? And with that, I'm going to shut up and let you guys take over. Who would like to start? Sue. It shall be.
Thank you, Sarah. You're just a gem. A couple of things came to my mind when you were talking. As a mental health therapist, I listen to people talk every week, every session, about all the pathology in their lives, all the negative things going on, their diagnosis and how that's hindering them. And some of them are trying to work on that. Some of them are really struggling. But I saw an interview with a psychologist, and he said, sometimes start off with what's going well? And some of my patients are like, what? You know? But if they think about it, you know, yeah, it's not all terrible, you know? And they're not failing. And another thing that a coworker told me was he asks every patient, to think of a win they had that day. And I noticed especially that the men patients like that. They never heard that. It's not therapy speak, you know. What was your win today? Maybe it was getting out of bed, taking a shower. Maybe it was having a difficult conversation with a family member. You know, all those things. There's nothing too small for a win. So I keep those two things in mind.
About a month ago, talking about small things, I ordered a linen bag impregnated with beeswax to keep my fresh bread in. And it was coming from Europe, so it wasn't coming in the mail. That was a month ago. And then I got two emails saying, we're having transportation problems. And just be patient. Well, I thought 2 weeks was a long time, so I sent them an email saying, I still don't have my package. And then I got an email saying, your package has been delivered. And so I called the company on that email, or texted them, and they said, your package has been delivered last Friday. I said, I don't have it. So they have a picture of me standing in my door accepting this package. But it was the wrong package. I had ordered something else from another company the same day. So I finally explained that to the original company. Yesterday, I reached in my mailbox for my mail, and there's a little tiny package. And it's my bread bag. Came from a lady named Abby in Chicago. Apparently, it was delivered to her by mistake, and I don't know what the connections were, but she put a stamp on an envelope and sent it back to me, and I sent her a thank you note. A little ray of sunshine in what has not been a stress-free month for anything. So now I have my bread bag, and I'm happy with the world.
Alex.
Okay, so one thing about me is I love my birthday, right? And every year, at least for the past few years, I've always had a great birthday. Not because I do anything big or huge, but because I make my birthday a collection of all of the small things. Everything, like I don't leave the house. Well, this year I left the house to get a matcha for myself. But other than that, I don't leave the house. I stay home. I go, what are my favorite things that I like to do that I don't do all the time? I played my Wii. I did a puzzle. What else I do? Just things like that. And I went in, I'm like, because it's my birthday, everything's magical. No matter what. The sun came up, the sun comes up every day, but it's my birthday. So the sun's up and it's great. Everything, every small thing I would look at and be like, that's incredible. That is magical. It's my birthday and I'm having a great day. And that's why, because every small thing contributed to a great day.
Last call? Or any call? No? Okay. She'll take it. What's your name?
Corey.
Yes. Hello.
I always say too much anyway, but good morning, everyone. And I'm happy to be here.
Happy!
I am so grateful to have known Sarah, and a long time ago, my friend wrote a book, and it was Silver Linings. And I was so excited to get my copies, and then I got copies for all of my other friends, because it changes things when you look for gratitude. And I'm terrible at journaling, so I'm actually still in my second copy of it, because over all these years, I still haven't filled all the pages. But I find myself writing, I'm grateful to start again. I'm grateful to practice happiness, that you can get into that habit, because like you were talking about therapy, we spend time focusing on justifying our misery, on finding, oh, well, why am I so anxious? Well, I can think of a million reasons why I'm so anxious. But we don't spend enough time practicing our happiness.
Happy.
Practicing the days that are magical and knowing that the sun does come up every day. Even if it's behind a cloud, we see the light coming back. So I am grateful to be here, grateful for Sarah's message, and happy that we pulled all those silver threads together to make a safety net of silver for each other.
Isn't it great to just wake up every day, honestly?
Yeah.
It does beat the alternative. Yes. Probably. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, that's how we get there.
Okay, where am I? Who am I?